Imagine a manifesto that could, actually spark a global ecological revolution. What does that even look like?
I mean, you'd probably picture a protest banner, right?
Yeah.
Or like a dense 1,000-page scientific treaty on climate change.
Exactly. But what if it's not that at all? What if it's just a painting of a couple sitting quietly in their suburban living room with their dog?
It sounds counterintuitive, but yeah, that's exactly what we're looking at today.
Welcome to today's deep dive. We are looking at a really fascinating stack of sources today. It's a collection of technical notes, personal reflections, and this is the best part: deep artistic self-critiques directly from the artist, Jairo Duque.
Yeah, and it's all centered around one single watercolor piece titled Allier Daniel.
Right. And our mission today is to unpack the exact intersection where this masterful, highly intentional artistic technique meets profound environmental philosophy.
That's a huge topic.
It really is. So for everyone listening, if you have ever wondered how the most mundane private moments in your house might actually be the most radical part of your life, get ready.
Because taking a completely private domestic snapshot and, elevating it into a universal declaration, that is a massive undertaking.
Oh, absolutely.
Artistically, it requires just an unbelievable amount of intentionality to pull off without it feeling like forced or preachy.
Yeah, you don't want it to feel like a PSA. So, okay, let's unpack this. Let's start with where this image even came from.
Right, because Duke didn't just invent this living room scene out of nowhere to make a point.
No, the notes are very specific. This painting is a resignification of a personal photograph.
Resignification.
Yeah, that word carries so much weight, doesn't it? Taking a literal objective record of a moment and extracting a hidden, deeper meaning from it.
Exactly. And the physical and emotional anchor of this piece is deeply tied to location, which really plays into that whole resignification idea.
Where was the original photo taken?
So the original photograph captures a family home in Diamond Bar, California.
Okay, Diamond Bar.
Yeah, and the artist's notes specifically mention Diamond Bar as the birthplace of Aaliyah, who is one of the subjects in the painting.
But the painting itself wasn't done there, right?
No, the
Oh.
actual creation, like the really complex translation of that photo into a painting that happened in Duke's studio, which is located in Whittier, California.
Oh, I see. So there's a physical separation there.
Exactly. By taking the memory of Diamond Bar into the creative sanctuary of the Whittier studio, the artist is, well, he's separating the raw data of the photo from its emotional truth.
That makes so much sense. So he's sitting in his Whittier studio looking at a photo of a home in Diamond Bar, and he's trying to capture a feeling rather than just like an architectural floor plan.
Right, he's aiming for the vibe, the essence of the place.
Think about how we all view our childhood homes, or just the places where you, as a listener, feel the most deeply rooted. When you picture that house you grew up in, you aren't visualizing flat walls and dimensions, are you?
No, not at all. You feel it.
Right. You feel this heavy, nostalgic, almost physical sensation in your chest. It's a feeling of safety. So, as a painter, how do you paint a memory like that without it just looking like a sterile snapshot of a sofa?
Well, you have to abandon strict reality. You have to build what Duke refers to in the sources as a symbolic space.
A symbolic space.
Yeah, the setting can no longer just be a room with furniture in it. The artist uses the canvas to force an intersection between the human subjects, their animal companion, and ultimately this broader ethical worldview.
Wow. So the home is stripped of its mundane utility. It becomes a refuge, a root.
Exactly, a meeting point for all these ideas.
So the living room stops being a place where you just, watch television. It becomes an arena where their human relationship, their connection to their dog, and their ethical views all kind of crash into each other.
And if the house is serving as a stage for all of that heavy stuff, the medium used to paint that stage has to fundamentally support the
Yep,
idea.
which brings us to the medium itself. The sources emphasize that Duke chose watercolor specifically for its fresh palette.
Right, because watercolor is fundamentally fluid.
Fluid, yeah.
When an artist is trying to convey ideas about ecology, natural life, and environmental harmony, opaque layers of thick oil paint might just feel too suffocating.
Oh, totally. Oil paint can feel very heavy, very static.
Exactly. But watercolor is literally just pigment suspended in water. So when we look at the heavy use of blues and greens in the background of this piece, our brains are actually processing the remnants of evaporated water on paper.
Wait, I love how you phrase that. Evaporated water on paper, it inherently feels breathable because the medium itself was fluid.
Yeah. The medium physically mirrors the message. The cool tones aren't just aesthetic choices to match the living room furniture. They actively create this physical sensation of clean air.
But I mean, a whole room full of blue and green could easily feel cold, right? Almost clinical, like a hospital waiting room.
It definitely could. And to counter that risk, Duke balances the cool background with warm tones in the skin and the closing of Aaliyah and Daniel.
Ah, okay. So that creates a contrast.
Right. It establishes this dynamic relationship between the environment and the humans within it. And then he applies the paint using techniques that really prioritize movement.
Like what? What kind of techniques?
Well, in the sky area, for instance, he uses what are called aguadas, these soft diagonal washes of color.
Okay, applying the wash on a diagonal completely changes the energy because a horizontal, flat blue sky would just feel static, dead even.
Exactly. The diagonal adds dynamism. It feels like a literal breeze moving through that symbolic space we talked about.
He also heavily relies on glazes, right? Or veladoras, as they call them.
Yeah.
I was looking into the mechanics of a watercolor glaze, and it is fascinating.
It's incredibly tricky to get right, yeah.
Because you lay down a completely transparent layer of paint over a previously dried layer.
And because that top layer is transparent, the light from the room you are physically standing in travels through the paint, hits the white paper underneath, and reflects back into your eye.
The painting is literally glowing from the inside out. That is wild.
It is. And Duke notes that this specific use of water and veladuras allows the scene to literally breathe. It maintains a purity that speaks directly to the intimacy of the moment.
Now, here's where it gets really interesting. Capturing that life force seems to require the artist to make a very difficult choice. Duke consciously rejects hyper-detailed realism.
Yeah, he favors gesture over perfection.
Which sounds completely counterintuitive at first. I mean, if you want to honor a deeply personal memory of a family, wouldn't you want to paint every single eyelash, every texture of the fabric, exactly as it was in the photo?
You'd think so, but memory just does not operate like a high-definition photograph.
That's true.
Think about it. When you recall a moment of profound connection or peace in your own life, you don't remember the exact thread count of the sweater you were wearing. You don't remember the precise shadow cast by a lamp.
No, I remember the light, the warmth, the essence of the instant.
Exactly, the essence. And by using loose, intentional brushstrokes, by focusing on gesture over microscopic precision, Duke invites the viewer's own imagination to fill in the gaps.
Wow. So the imperfection actually makes it feel more emotionally true.
Yes.
If it were photorealistic, it would probably feel like we were intruding on a stranger's very specific private life. The looseness makes the feeling universal.
And that looseness also serves a really crucial mechanical function in the composition itself.
How so?
Well, a softer, less detailed background naturally funnels the viewer's eye toward the core structure of the painting, which is incredibly deliberate.
Right. The sources describe this composition as an affective triangle.
Yes, an affective triangle.
A triangle built on affection. I love that. The three points of this triangle are Aaliyah, Daniel, and their pet dog.
But here's the thing. In a traditional family portrait, the humans are always the undisputed focal point.
Oh, for sure. You put the couple dead center, smiling at the viewer, and the dog is usually just like a cute accessory sitting at their feet.
Right. But building the entire compositional structure around the animal is a massive departure from that norm.
What's fascinating here is that the dog occupies the absolute central place in this painting, visually and symbolically.
It really does. It represents the living link between the couple and the natural world.
So in the context of an ecological manifesto, yeah, the animal is not a prop. It's a constant living reminder of our respect for life outside of ourselves.
And you can physically see that respect in how the figures are painted. Have you noticed how both Aaliyah and Daniel are positioned?
Yeah, they have this inclined posture. They're leaning in toward the dog.
Exactly. And that is not just a casual pose caught on camera. It generates a literal visual flow.
It totally does. Looking at the piece, my eyes follow the slope of their shoulders straight down to the animal. It transmits this overwhelming sense of tenderness.
Care, tenderness, and what the artist refers to as complicity.
Complicity, like a shared silent understanding between the three of them.
The composition manipulates your attention brilliantly. You look at one human figure, and their posture directs you to the dog.
Then the dog anchors your focus.
Right. And then the composition directs you to the other human. You are basically trapped in this intimate emotional circuit.
The viewer is forced to participate in their bond rather than just passively consume the image. That is so smart.
It is. And Duke amplifies the dog's central role using a technique called white reserves, which honestly blew my mind when I realized how unforgiving it is.
Oh, tell me about white reserves. Because in watercolor, there's generally no white paint, right? You can't just add white highlights at the end.
Exactly. If you want a brilliant white area in a watercolor, you have to meticulously plan ahead. You have to reserve the bare paper, literally never letting paint touch that specific spot.
That sounds incredibly stressful. One slip of the brush and the highlight is gone forever.
It is. But he uses those white reserves, combined with very soft touches of color, to render the dog's light coat.
So, by leaving the paper bare right in the middle of the canvas, he introduces the brightest point of light in the entire painting.
Yes. The light literally emanates from the animal, reinforcing it as the visual and symbolic heart of the scene.
Okay, so we're talking about all these masterful choices, the glazes, the effective triangle, the white reserves. But reading through Duke's own personal reflections in the sources, he is surprisingly harsh on himself.
He really is. The vulnerability of his self-critique is striking.
He breaks down his own piece and notes several technical shortcomings that clearly still bother him.
Yeah. For example, he points out that he could have deepened the differentiation of planes.
What does that mean exactly for the non-painters listening?
Essentially, he feels he didn't separate the architectural background from the figures in the foreground strongly enough. He thinks if he had, it would have created a greater sense of spatial depth, more three-dimensionality.
Got it. And he also mentions the tonal transitions in the faces and the clothes. He thinks he could have refined those transitions to get a richer, more modeled look.
He's analyzing it like a technician.
But I actually have to push back on his own self-critique here. Is technical perfection actually the enemy of emotional resonance?
That's a great question.
Because think about it. If he had gone back into that Whittier studio, layered more paint, cleanly separated those background planes, and perfectly smoothed out every transition on their faces, wouldn't the painting have lost that breathing quality we talked about? Would it have become stiff?
That is the eternal struggle of the artist. And it's a core tension in watercolor specifically. The moment you decide to, quote unquote, fix a watercolor by adding more layers, you risk suffocating it.
Right. You lose the transparency.
Exactly. Overworking the paint destroys the transparency that allows the light to bounce off the paper. Mm. And to his credit, Duke ultimately recognizes this reality.
He does. He concludes his self-critique by stating that despite the flaws he sees, he values the freshness of the stroke.
He consciously prioritizes the chromatic coherence and the narrative clarity above technical perfection.
Because those elements are what sustain the emotional reading of the work. The raw gesture, the human imperfection. That's what actually connects with the viewer on a visceral level.
And honestly, it is phenomenal advice for any aspiring artists listening to this deep dive.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. What would you say is the main takeaway for them?
It is incredibly easy to fall into the trap of clinical perfectionism. You can critique your spatial depth and your tonal transitions endlessly in the studio.
Mm-hmm.
But the primary function of art is to make the viewer feel something.
Right.
If you sacrifice the soul of the piece, the breath, the transparency, just to prove your technical prowess, you have failed the fundamental mission of the artwork.
That is so well said. The soul of this piece, that choice to prioritize emotion and connection over sterile perfection, that is exactly what allows it to transition from a micro, intimate portrait to a massive global declaration.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, this is not just a nice rendering of a couple in California anymore.
No, it's way bigger than that. Duke states that Alea Daniel is a tribute to a relationship integrating love, environmental awareness, and what he calls animality.
Animality. It's such a fascinating word choice, isn't it?
It really is. Because usually when people use the word animalistic or animality, it has a negative connotation. It implies a lack of civilization or being wild in a bad way.
Right, like losing your humanity.
Exactly. But Duke completely flips it. Here, animality becomes an acknowledgement of our deep connection to the animal kingdom. We are companions sharing a space, not superiors ruling over it.
And the subjects themselves represent a deeply ecological lifestyle. They are actively committed to defending nature.
Duke goes so far as to call them true revolutionaries of life in his notes.
True revolutionaries of life. That's a heavy title.
It is. And we usually picture a revolution involving, I don't know, barricades, protests in city squares, and loud speeches with megaphones.
Yeah, chaos and noise.
But the idea that true revolution actually happens quietly in your living room, based entirely on how you treat the creature sitting on the rug next to you, that is profound.
It redefines what it means to be radical.
So what does this all mean? The painting projects a necessary global ideal, right?
Yes. The sources know this vision is applicable everywhere, whether you're in the United States, in Latin America, or anywhere globally.
It proposes a culture where respectful coexistence between humans, animals, and the environment is the absolute ethical priority.
We're zooming all the way out now. We started with a specific photograph of a home in Diamond Bar.
Translated through fluid washes of pigment in a Whittier art studio.
And we arrive at a global manifesto. Mm. The watercolor is a literal declaration of principles.
Let's break those principles down. Mm. The home is the nucleus.
The animal is a companion.
The couple is a conscious alliance.
And ecology is the ultimate horizon.
It aims to transform environmental respect into the dominant culture. And, you know, the real genius of it is that it does this without preaching.
Right. There's no apocalyptic imagery here. No melting ice caps or burning forests.
It simply shows the undeniable beauty of living in harmony. It gives the viewer a visual representation of what we are actually trying to save.
That's powerful stuff.
It really is. To summarize, Jara Duke takes a single specific family photo and uses the transparent, breathing nature of watercolor to make us physically feel a universal message about ecological respect.
He really bridges that gap between technical mastery and emotional truth.
He does, and it's a powerful challenge to all of us listening to reconsider the weight of our own everyday lives. So look at your mundane moments. Look at your pets, your living space, the way you share quiet time with your partner or your family.
Do those seemingly small private elements reflect your deepest ethical values?
That is the big question, because here is a final thought to mull over as you go about your day. If a masterful artist were to quietly observe your daily life exactly as it is right now and paint a portrait of your living room, what declaration of principles would that painting reveal to the world?